One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Momai Gutavi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. We couldn't do it without you. If you want to connect with us, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. Have you rated the show yet? It'll take you 2 seconds on your podcast player. Just scroll down and give us 5 stars if you think we've earned it. We appreciate our amazing sponsors. They help to make this show happen. Chemical Free Body has been with us from the very beginning, and Tim James has been on this show more than anybody besides me. And if you're looking for supplements that actually work, chemicalfreebody.com has you covered. You can get the detox bundle, which I've done on 2 different occasions. It's a 90-day program. It's Green 85, a green drink in the morning, and a handful of capsules, and that's it. You do that for 3 months, and it will change your life. I have done it. You will have to buy new shorts like I did. So if you're interested in checking that out, or if you want to take a look at what Tim has created, the Water Hero filtration system, I encourage you to take a look at that. I got a chance to test that out in Acapulco this year. It really works. Hey, if it can clean Mexican water, drinking water, it can do a lot for your water system as well. So if you're interested, go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and just do some shopping. Check it out. See what you think. Promo code is macro to save yourself some money on your way out. And also, I appreciate the folks over at C60 Power. They've been with me since the beginning as well. I just went out to lunch with Ken Schwartz, the scientist, the founder. We like to do that every now and then, check in on each other, see what they're doing. Well, he built C60 Power years ago. It's making the best carbon 60 out there. It's a free radical sponge. It travels through your body, finding free radicals and resetting them over and over again. It's the most powerful antioxidant known to man. It's hundreds of times more powerful than anything else out there. And it actually works. And I'll tell you how I know it works, because when I had a metabolic functions assessment with Christian Jordan, of my health practitioner, We went through the results on his show, and when we got to DNA damage, my score was so low that it didn't have a number associated with it. He assumed it was broken, and I had to tell him, no, this is probably from me taking C60 power every day for the last 4 years. And he said, well, your DNA damage score isn't even registering. So that's been my result from it. If you are somebody that wants to improve your health, take a look at it. Go to c60power.com and just take a look. Or c60power.com/macro. Actually, they have a landing page for us as well. I've got my cats hooked on it. This is both a good thing and a bad thing. My one cat wants it at 5 o'clock in the morning. So now I'm getting up every morning pouring C60, it's oil, it's like a little liquid oil. You pour it in a spoon, and I'm holding it down there for this cat to have it at 5 o'clock in the morning. Some results may vary. Hopefully your cats don't pester you, but my animals love it. So if you have an elderly pet, check it out. They seem to love it. So c60power.com/macro to get yourself sorted out with all that. Well, it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program from the Free Thought Project and Policing the Police, Jason Bassler. Hey, Jason. Good to see you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me back, brother. I always enjoy talking with you, and so much to talk about today. And you had me laughing there about enabling your cat's drug addiction, I guess you could say.
Yes, it's the best kind of drugs you can get your cats hooked on. It's
very true. Yeah, good point.
Very beneficial. So now I've got three cats. I've got two of them hooked on it. One of them demands it in the morning. The other one I can kind of get away with later in the day. But the third one, once she gets on board, it's going to be all over for me. But so I'm herding cats over here. How are you doing herding cats in California? It seems like we've been watching as a former Californian myself, it's been on my radar, of course. What a beautiful state that's been gutted by insane policies, really. I mean, growing up, we'd always been told we were going to have that massive earthquake and half of California was going to fall into the ocean. And in the end, it was Democratic policies that wound up doing it instead. I never saw that one coming. What's going on in California? How are you managing your mental health by living in that state these days?
Well, man, it's very tricky. Let's put it that way. There are some good people doing some good things here. And those of us who live in California, we always acknowledge that it's such a beautiful state. You know, it's such beautiful geography that it really is hard to leave in many ways. But as you noted, the government is constantly screwing things up. A bit of a controlled demolition, as I think you wrote a book entitled at one point with Jeff Berwick. But yeah, man, it's a total mess here. And we're doing what we can to kind of clean up the mess and teach people what they need to know, educate people, keep them informed. And yeah, between trying to do that and wake people up online, it is quite a tall order. I don't know why I do this, how I have the abilities to sustain it for as long as I have for the past decade plus. But nevertheless, here I am. Here we are. And we just continue to persevere forward, I suppose.
Yeah, and I thought of you during the Summer of Love riots this year, when everybody was in Southern California protesting and freaking out and lighting cars on fire. The one thing that went through my mind is you're walking into a trap. I mean, it might not be the Capitol building, and this might be state-sanctioned. You know, maybe they want you to do this, but between the Reaper drones that are circling above, the flock cameras, the cell phone in your pocket that's pinging your location everywhere, you're on camera and digitally tracked being a part of these events. And whether it's the Southern California riots that's happening this summer or some future endeavor that we find ourselves faced with, this is a bad idea to go to these events and get yourself mapped by the state. And the whole time I kept thinking about it was like, policing the police. Like, when is Jason and the crew gonna talk about guys, you shouldn't really walk into this trap? Did you, when you were watching this in this summer, were you having similar thoughts?
Yeah, very similar. You know, although I'll put a small caveat in there that I don't think we should be discouraged. It's almost like the self-censorship ploy that they're trying to put on us, right, with all the censorship campaigns. We don't want to stop protesting. We don't want to stop utilizing our First Amendment rights. I know we were having a conversation about activism and protests before we even got on here. But at the same time, if you are planning on disobeying some laws, the curfew, if you're disobeying police orders, if you are going to do anything violent or involved with civil disobedience, you are setting yourself up for disaster. 100%, you're spot on with that, Charlie. And it seems to only be getting worse now, right? Because we've seen just recently, ICE has come out and acknowledged that they're actually using an app now on their cell phone that has facial recognition and also a fingerprint scanner, but it has facial recognition. So it's easy as just putting your phone in somebody's face for ICE. And there's been reports as well as law enforcement using this new technology as well. So this is, yeah, all coming to a head here of the surveillance state that we've been warning about for so many years, including Edward Snowden and so many others, is here. And it's going to continue to only expand, especially when Trump's tapping a company like Palantir, which we know already has deep CIA ties with people like Peter Thiel at the helm. And, you know, they have their predictive policing systems now. They're trying to identify hotspots. They're flagging individuals who are potential offenders. They're even generating risk scores for people. You know, they don't have any knowledge that this is even happening. And all of this now is, as Trump had mentioned, moving into a AI-driven biometric database, a master database that Palantir is all putting together. And this is going to be something that is used cross agencies, cross government agencies. So it is going to be something that, you know, unfortunately is going to be a boondoggle on our privacy. It already is. It's going to be something that continues to put people like us, anybody who's speaking out, dissidents, in a certain file, in a certain potential camp of people who, you know, would potentially do violence or any of these other things that they like to claim that, you know, we're domestic terrorists and all that. Right. So, yeah, there's already police that are using these systems like the Palantir's AI. There was a LAPD that was using it. It's called the Laser Program. It was all data-driven predictive policing. And it was basically just what we had seen in Minority Report. It's this idea that they're going to assess individuals based on their arrest records, their parole data, stuff like that, and try to figure out if they're going to commit a crime. Now, this was also rolled out in New Orleans, believe it or not. It was a secret partnership between the gang member affiliate, a camera task force, I can't remember the exact name of it, within the police department in New Orleans. And they actually partnered with Palantir, and the city council had no clue about it. They didn't even know it was happening. So if you think about that, I mean, it's quite ominous. They're using algorithms to flag individuals who are likely to commit crimes, but they're doing all this behind the city council's back. So a private company, Palantir, and law enforcement are kind of sidestepping the local laws and provisions. I mean, if you can't see how that's trouble or problematic, then I think, you know, you should probably pull your head out of your ass. But at the same time, these systems have major concerns, right? Because we know that there's already been innocent people who've been arrested in the past due to the errors and the bias. There's no due process involved that exists right now with these systems. And it just raises a lot more issues when it comes to like these bias algorithms and disproportionately targeting minorities. And really, Charlie, that is just the tip of the iceberg too. I mean, we could get into all the different things that Trump's already pushing to kind of strengthen law enforcement, as he calls it. He wrote that executive order within the first month of taking his new office. And there's so much more than that. Of course, they're also trying to push all this MS-13 fear-mongering to, you know, continue to bolster security on the borders and more police. And it's really become a really messy situation. We're turning into more of a police state now than ever. And I know we've been saying that for a long time, so it's pretty scary. But things are certainly escalating.
Yeah, and we've been watching this problem reaction solution over the last couple of years with the Biden administration. Like, problem? Everybody's coming across the border. Literally, millions of people are coming across the border. Reaction, oh no, we got to stop it. We got to put Trump in there, and then Trump's going to stop this, right? And then
yes,
and exactly. Solution is, here comes the biometrics, you know, in order to keep ourselves safe, in order to maintain our our borders, which we desperately need. That guy Biden was so bad, he opened our borders. But I, Trump, am going to save you. And in order to do that, we're going to need to biometrically tag all these individuals that come in here. But it's definitely just going to be for them and certainly not for the rest of the public, right?
Exactly.
And so you can see it like the slow walk into this. And the next thing you know, we've got law enforcement using these sorts of technologies that, as you said, aren't getting cleared by even city council. This is the relationship between Palantir. Well, the relationship between Palantir and anybody freaks me out. But in my mind, it had always been foreign policy, sort of like it's horrible that they're giving social credit scores to buildings in Gaza and then destroying them, right? Or threat assessment scores or whatever they are to classify which one gets blown up and blows up. It's terrible and disgusting, undeniably. But I always had, in my mind, Palantir was always for external use. And then now recently, I suppose it's become obvious or the mask has come off and the Palantir is there. Their software systems are being used against us now under the guise of keeping us safety, like for your safety, as the Nazis would say, right? But it's not for our safety. It's to categorize and manage and create databases of Americans. It's gross when it's happening anywhere of to foreign nationals as well. But when it's turned on us, you would sort of hope that we would be the last people they would use it against, but that would be wrong. And so here we are facing a situation where even the New Orleans Police Department is using Palantir. This is a slippery slope that I don't know how we recover from. What do we even do about something like this?
Well, we keep talking about it. That's one thing. And unfortunately, our friends on the right seem to continue to be able to work their mental gymnastics to justify stuff like this. I don't really understand how or why. Especially when, the small government conservatives were the same people that were warning about the surveillance state in the first place. But I guess if Trump's behind it and there's some kind of, solution to a problem, as you pointed out, which is the immigration crisis, then they're all on board for it. They also talk about how it's going to be potentially better, as the Real ID was, for voting rights and some type of security with voting and stuff like that. But, you touched on some good points there, Charlie, and, sometimes I feel so overwhelmed learning about this stuff. I check different sources just to make sure it's true, and I'll confirm it's true in different sources. And then I almost don't want to believe it myself because it just seems so crazy as to what's going on right now. Because we've always been told, the enemies were overseas. The enemies are the terrorists, right, who want to come and take your freedoms. But somehow we've become the enemy. And I think maybe that was always the plot because, we look at things like the drug war. Who was the enemy? We were. We look at the war on terror. Who was the enemy? We were. So the problem here is that for the past few years, there's been this private-public relationship between the state and companies like Flock. I know you mentioned Flock systems, Flock cameras, and that's something that even a lot of people in our circles don't even really know about. You mentioned Flock cameras, and they're like, huh? And just a quick caveat here, Flock cameras are deployed in over 4,000 cities, 42 states. They claim somewhere upwards to 40,000 cameras across the country. They're all deployed with automated license plate readers. So they're tracking all of our movement. They're tracking where you're going, if you're a frequent visitor, all these things. And there's even Flock cameras that are now being placed in FedEx trucks. Which is really weird. They're actually collaborating with law enforcement, retail properties like Lowe's, Kaiser Permanente, malls. A lot of the companies that own the big company that owns a lot of the malls are now employing these in their parking lots as well. And so, it's just absolutely crazy the amount of data collection that's being generated right now. And not only that, but, I was just talking about how law enforcement's tapping into these apps to identify individuals. Well, now with these license plate readers, we just found out a few weeks ago that they are automated license plate readers, but they're also now real-time live cameras, surveillance cameras that Flock has modified them. So law enforcement could tap into any of them in real time. Very much like the Amazon Ring cameras. I'm sure you heard about that whole scandal that was going down. Well, finally, Amazon kind of succumbed to the pressure. They actually cut law enforcement off unless there's a warrant. But Flock is still going full bore, straight forward with this partnership with law enforcement. And I guess maybe they don't have as much of the consumer backlash as they would with like Amazon Ring would, so they're able to kind of move forward with it. But these tools are creating a sprawling surveillance state, and they're flagging people, you know, that maybe haven't even done anything wrong and putting them into these databases. And I'm just going to go one step further here. Just this morning, I just found out that Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, I put out a tweet about it, is allocating $2.5 billion into AI-powered surveillance across all federal and major state highways for facial recognition, plate readers, which we were just talking about, and autonomous surveillance drones, which will all be collecting surveillance and real-time tracking 24/7. This is all in Trump's new Big Beautiful Bill, and nobody's talking about that at all. Is this the police state we want to live in? Is this the police state that our children, we want our children to grow up in and live in? I don't think it is. So yeah, what do we do to fix this? How do we change things? Well, we keep talking about it. We keep mentioning Palantir. We keep talking about these Flock cameras. Like I said, nobody's talking about that. I mean, okay, maybe on Twitter. You move outside of Twitter, you even go to Facebook or Instagram, and it's far and few between. So we keep talking about this stuff. We keep applying pressure to our city councils. We do everything that we can within our ability, at least locally, to try to make change.
And then we bring in the Blade Runners from the UK and have them start cutting down cameras. Or become the American franchise of the Blade Runners and start cutting down these cameras like they're
civil
doing
disobedience
in the UK.
Yes.
I mean, you can make it hurt. This is a dystopian hellscape that they're creating here. And of course, it goes under the Department of Homeland Security's motto of, you know, if you see something, say something. Well, I see something. I see you guys building a surveillance state. I'm trying to say something about it, and they don't seem to be too appreciative of it. But it goes back to this sort of snitch culture of that was really sort of boldened during COVID. If your neighbors have too many cars in the driveway over Thanksgiving, they might be having a super spreader event. You've got to call the authorities on them. And this idea that we need to keep an eye on everybody so that we're safe, which is, I don't think, the real reason for this. I mean, what's the end goal? I mean, at some point, they've got license plate readers. They can track our movements and they can see where we're going. And I don't love any component of that at all. I just wonder, what are they going to do with it? I mean, I know they're building a digital voodoo doll of each one of us, right? That has our browsing history and the things that we say online and where we shop and what we email. And you can put together a history of that. I suppose this is just an added component. This is once you leave your computer and get in your car and go somewhere, now we also know where you are and we feed this into the machine. Is it overkill? I mean, do they have all this information, but what are they going to do with it?
You would think it would have been overkill 10 years ago, Charlie, when we learned about all this stuff. Yeah. And I mean, remember reading crazy statistics about all the data that they're collecting every single hour at these NSA mainframe, you know? And so the fact that it's only expanding, I mean, I think they probably have a database on each of us and all of our texts, all of our emails, all of our political ideologies, our positions, probably anything that we've ever said bad about our great leaders. I mean, I don't want to speculate too much, but honestly, where is it going? You know, it sounds dark, man. And I hate saying this stuff. Part of me almost dies talking about it because it does seem so bleak and dystopian, but I feel like we have to talk about it to shine a light on it. And, you know, this applies to what I was just talking about not wanting to believe it. But we're talking about these things. We've been talking about these things since COVID. We've been talking about the digital IDs. We've been talking about the CBDCs. We've been talking about the social credit scores, the 15-minute cities. I mean, at the end of the day, what is a government anyway, right? I mean, a government is here to ultimately imbue control and put control over the citizenry. So I know it sounds very dark and ominous, but ultimately I don't think that we're straying out of this timeline anytime soon. I mean, Trump just signed the bill to ban CBDCs, right? But now we're being given this backdoor bait and switch, which is the stable coins. Now they're actually doing the same exact thing with stable coins that they wanted to do with the CBDC, but it doesn't have the same name to it. It doesn't have that same allure of negativity, I guess, because people started to kind of catch on about the CBDCs. Hell, I even wrote a book, Three Ways to Prepare for CBDCs. We were trying to, I think everybody, at least on the right, it seemed like the left was pretty clueless about it, but at least right-leaning individuals, libertarians, conservatives were aware of the CBDC. But now, what are they doing? Well, they're switching them out for the stable coins, and they have that whole train that's running now. And, you know, I guess we could go down the line with saying the same thing about the digital IDs. I mean, we're already one step closer with the real IDs. You know, Trump had the opportunity to kick the can down the road with that. They had been doing so since a few years after 9/11 in 2005, when that law was actually mandated. But each administration, one after another, continued to delay it. And now, all of a sudden, probably important to ask yourself, the real ID comes online, right? So now we're just one step closer to having that. So ultimately, I think this is all about control. I think that they are trying to make some type of portfolio, some type of database as to who we are, what we're all about, who are the threats, and where does it go after that? Boy, Charlie, I don't know. I hope it's not some type of, you know, re-education camp roundup for people like me and you. I guess it could be. But maybe they'll punish us in other ways. Maybe they'll punish us by, I don't know, turning off our money. Maybe they'll use programmable money to dock us a few points when we do say bad things about our dear leader, you know? So it really is hard to speculate onto where it's going, but we have all the facts that are pointing in the same direction, that it doesn't look good.
Well, one thing we're certain of is that they are removing our rights. And as a subset of that, most Americans don't even know what their rights are to begin with. You have done a lot of outstanding work on knowing your rights and seminars about knowing your rights. This seems like it should be low-hanging fruit, like everybody should have an understanding of this. And then you dig in and you find out that they don't. We don't really know what our rights are, do we?
Unfortunately, most people, I would say 95% of people, yeah, really don't. It's scary.
So, and, let's say we now come to an understanding that we know that we don't know, but we want to know. Like, we want to get ourselves educated and build up this sort of suit of armor so that we're protected when we go out into the public. Let's say we run across an event and we decide we want to film it, right? There's a police interaction with somebody. Are we allowed to film it? I've seen plenty of videos where the cops come after the person filming it and start making all sorts of threats. And I don't believe that the cops know their rights or know our rights very much or the law. they seem to be the least educated on it. So I'm not surprised that they're arguing with us. But what are our rights when it comes to filming in public and interacting with police officers? And I tell people that are close to me, don't. To the extent that you can get away from them, don't interact with them. But if you have to, it behooves us to know what we can and can't say. So what do we need to know about a situation like that?
Well, you made a great point there, and that's actually something I've been trying to tell people that I've been teaching about this, which is any opportunity you have to not have an interaction with a law enforcement officer is always the best route. So if you can avoid it, if they're a couple cars behind you, pull off the exit that's next. Whatever you have to do just to avoid having that interaction, definitely do it. But to answer your question, yes, we absolutely have the First Amendment right to film in public. It doesn't matter where you're at, as long as it's a public space, a public corridor, an easement. And you're right, Charlie. You know, if anybody should know the laws and know the rights and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, it should be our law enforcement employees. But unfortunately, most of the time, man, they are the most clueless. And nothing highlights this more than the First Amendment auditors on YouTube. And I'm sure you've seen them. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but these guys go around basically to public installations, to public police departments, to post offices, military bases, places like that. They go online, they look to see where the public easements are, what the actual property lines are, so they know their rights. They know where they can stand and where they can't stand, what's actually technically government property, which is still public property, but they do have some restricted areas, you know? So these guys, they go up to these buildings, these institutions, and they just start filming. They'll film from the outside. They'll just film the building. They'll film the entries, the exits, the parking lots. And oftentimes that's enough to trigger the employees who work there, the public officials who work there, and of course the cops, who almost always eventually end up showing up and demonstrating that they don't know the laws themselves. And so it always makes for a very entertaining time. There's quite a few really good auditors out there. I wouldn't say all of them are philosophically aligned with us or kind of based in any way. I think most of them just kind of get a kick out of messing with cops and knowing their rights. But there are a few who are kind of philosophically aligned with anarchism and libertarianism. One comes to mind named James Freeman. And check him out, because, yeah, he'll do these things where he'll go up to cops and he'll actually turn it around on the cop. He'll start asking the cops questions like, where have you been today? Have you been drinking? Stuff like that. And it's always just makes... Yeah. We've had him on the Free Thought Project podcast, guys, so check out that one. But it always makes for a hilarious interaction. But it really does highlight how little police know, and the public, because a lot of times the public will come up to these auditors and they'll say, hey, you're not allowed to film me. You need my consent and blah, 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 blah. Nope. It's not true. If you're in public, you do not need any type of consent whatsoever. So that is one of the many things that I've actually started to begin teaching. I just started a Know Your Rights course seminar, 1 hour online, and I did the last one last week. I've actually done a couple of them locally here in my area, and I did them. I got great feedback from the participants, from the audience, and I realized, Charlie, that I really, really enjoy educating people, especially on their rights and empowering themselves. So I have my next one next Wednesday coming up, July 27th. And I would love for you and your audience to be there. In fact, if you use the code FIRSTCLASS for 10% off, that'll get a few bucks off. But it's so important, man. In fact, and this is the last thing I'll say here, because I know I'm talking a lot, but the people I talk to, even my friends, do you know your rights? What would you do if you were asked to take a breathalyzer test? What would you do if the TSA pulled you aside and said they need additional screening, blah, blah, blah? Do you know? Do you have any idea? And 9 out of 10, like I said, the 95% statistic there, 9 out of 10 do not know. People think they know, but they don't. And especially when you get into these tough situations like that, how to de-escalate police, what your gun law rights are. I mean, there's so many different things, how to navigate the DUI checkpoints. I mean, I go over so many different things. In fact, it goes over an hour just because I pack so much in there. I talk about fake cops. I talk about civil asset forfeiture, what to do if you're caught in a protest and you're in your car. I mean, all these things apply to how we use our rights. So to me, I think it's invaluable, and I'm trying to give it to people at a reasonable cost, because it is very empowering, and it's something that we should all know.
Yeah, and for those of you that may think that civil asset forfeiture is just a nothing thing out there, more items of value were confiscated by civil asset forfeiture than burglaries in an entire year. The cops depend on this for revenue generated for their budgets. They factor in that they're going to steal a certain percentage of valuable items during the course of a year. They actually calculate this. This seems crazy to me. The civil asset forfeiture, and especially depending on where you live, if you're in certain corridors that are deemed like freeway corridors that are deemed, I don't know, drug trafficking areas, like, you know, very, you know, north and south freeways or east and west freeways, that, you know, interstate freeways. There's certain spots, like in Tennessee, where I hear, don't even go there. You will get pulled over. They will go through your car, look for anything. What are your rights in a civil asset forfeiture situation where you get pulled over randomly? You got a busted taillight or something, and you've got $15,000 in cash in an envelope because you're on your way to a used car dealership to buy yourself a used car for your son who just turned 16, and you're excited and he's excited, and next thing you know, you're pulled over and the cops say, what is this, drug money? And then they take it from you. And then the process isn't you filing a lawsuit against them. The process is the money has to sue the police, right? Like the item itself. I mean, this is a crazy town. How do you even manage something like this?
Right, yeah. It is probably the worst of the revenue generation racket schemes that law enforcement really has come up with over the past few decades. And it really does turn due process on its head, because all they have to do is say you're suspected of a crime. So
that's it.
There doesn't have to be, yeah, any type of evidence, any type of probable cause. And again, no due process. So obviously, who are the people who are going to be most targeted by this? It's going to be the low-income minorities, right? And this is just one more way, as you were saying, Charlie, that the police target us and steal from us right out of our own pockets, right out of our own vehicles. So unfortunately, as of right now, there really isn't much that we can do legally to push back. If you're in that situation, the best you can do ultimately is say that you do not consent to any searches or seizures, and film the interaction. Do not obstruct the investigation. Do not interfere in any way. Do not, you know, get in their way. Don't do anything that could actually escalate the situation. Film the whole entire thing. Make sure that you film yourself not consenting. Say it several times. That's important in court. But you're right, Charlie. Ultimately, this does become a legal battle. It becomes an expensive legal battle. And a lot of times, the people who are traveling with large amounts of money like that, that's their life savings that they're moving from one location to the next. So once that gets confiscated, that's, you know, that's their big Easter egg that's completely gone. So it does make it, yeah, extremely challenging to fight back in any way. And as we've seen over and over again, we have kangaroo courts in this country, you know, the same institutions that take our money by force, by the initiation of force, are also allocating it to the courts and to the police. So do you think there's actually going to be any sense of justice or fairness in any way? I mean, no, they're always going to side with law enforcement, right? And that tends to happen 9 times out of 10. So unfortunately, again, these people are not here to protect and serve us. The best way to avoid this is just to steer clear of law enforcement. They see them walking down the street, take another side street, go somewhere else. Avoid them in every shape, way, and possible, because that's going to be the smartest strategy. Not applying your rights, not talking your way out of it. And look, you might get a hothead. You might get somebody who has a chip on their shoulder, a cop who's wearing the costume and they think that they're God's gift to the world. It happens more often than not, you know? So you always, anytime you have an interaction with a law enforcement officer, it's a roll of the dice. It could go any way. You could have somebody who's cordial and polite and kind and trying to help you. From my experience, it's not that often that happens. Not to say all police are terrible people, but there is this idea and this mentality within police culture that they are superior, that they expect us to bow down to them, that they expect some level of subservience to them. So if you automatically have that interaction with them, and people like us generally aren't going to initially respect their authority, we might respect them as an individual or as a human, but we're not going to, you know, bow down to their authority. They're pretty keen to picking up on that. They know that. And a lot of times that's actually more of a problem than breaking the law for police, you know. And I think the great William Grigg, who's an old writer, he wrote for the Free Thought Project, but he called that contempt of cop, you know, instead of contempt of court. It's very similar. It's contempt of cop, you know. So don't interact with them, steer clear, and always film every interaction.
Well, now we've got a new variable, which is ICE raids, right? So we've got immigration coming in, and this is very random and haphazardly going through, you know, malls or businesses. We're starting to hear these different scenarios where teams of ICE officers are showing up. What do we do if, by just a turn of bad luck, you wind up in a situation where immigration, customs has pulled you over and they want to ask you some questions about things, and maybe you're a little bit browner in shade than they would like, and they start to ask questions about what your origins are, your nationality, and wanting to see your license and documentation. What do we do in a situation like this where you want to, you don't want to escalate things, especially if you haven't done anything wrong, but you fully know that it does. You don't have to be doing anything wrong for things to escalate when it comes to dealing with the police. Anything can trigger them. So now we're dealing with federal agents, and God knows what they're up to. And Trump has just emboldened them by quadrupling or quintupling their budget. So now they're going to have all the money in the world and a mandate to go out there and make America great again, whatever that means, and go rattle some cages and round people up. And if you wind up on the wrong side of them, my feeling is that this is way worse than just some dipshit cop who clocked you going 15 miles over the speed limit. Now you've got serious problems with the feds. How do you lawyer up immediately? What do we do?
Yeah, again, don't consent. Do not consent to any searches or seizures. Now, it gets a little tricky with federal agents as far as your rights, and especially when it comes to Border Patrol, because some things don't quite line up. So one fun fact here is that there's actually Border Patrol checkpoints 120 miles inland from the border. So this idea that there's a chance that you'll never end up running into a Border Patrol checkpoint besides going to the border is just a fallacy. So in that case, actually, Border Patrol does have the ability to ask for your ID. They can ask for your ID and insurance. You have to fork that over, but you don't actually have to answer any questions as far as being a legal citizen or any other of the kind of incriminating questions that they often ask from you. So that's at the Border Patrol checkpoints. But if you are pulled over by ICE, let's say, which I don't think I've heard too many times of ICE actually pulling people over. I think most of the time they go to their location or go to a certain location or something like that. But if it does happen, it's the same exact thing where it's like, you have to give over your rights. You have to give your ID, your information, your registration, your insurance. You actually do technically legally have to step out of the vehicle if that is something that they demand from you. Now, you can push back from that, but the Supreme Court has upheld that police can legally order you out of your vehicle and all passengers. So, again, we're kind of in between a rock and a hard place here. If you do get targeted by ICE, the best thing that you could do is mostly just document the situation, document that all the procedures, protocols were handled correctly. Otherwise, you're going to have to go through the legal route, the legal apparatus, through the courts to try to fight it in that realm. But when they actually do stop you, it's best to be firm but polite, try to comply when necessary. Again, always try to be testing these boundaries, like I was just talking about when, you know, cops could be the hothead, right? I think what I've heard is the best strategy is to initially appease them, make them feel like they have a level of authority and superiority over you. And I know that sounds kind of backwards to people like us, but we're talking about people who have the legal right to kill you and get away with it. So if you want to protect yourself, your family who happens to be in the car, and your life, I would suggest the first thing that you do is just comply. Give them that illusion that they actually have control over the situation. Once they have that confirmed in their mind, that's when you're able to start applying your rights, start to pressure, start questioning, and doing everything that you can to wiggle yourself out of the situation. But if you try to do that before, then there becomes this power balance act where the officer is trying to kind of become the alpha in the situation, the dominant force in the situation, while you're also applying your rights. And that could spell trouble for you, because a lot of times cops are intimidated by people who know their rights. And a lot of times cops don't know their rights. So again, be smart about how you interact with these people. Anything could go sideways at any moment in time. And they have the resources, they have the knowledge to know how to cover things up, to bend the law and make you the bad guy. So that's part of what I go over. I do a risk threat assessment in my seminar, and we talk about the signs to actually identify when a cop's going to be a little too aggressive, when they're a little too overzealous, and how to manage that, how to de-escalate the situation.
Here's a lesser important interaction, but one I think about from time to time, especially like in my days when I lived in Las Vegas and would go back and forth between Southern California. There's agricultural checkpoints. Yeah. Every now and then, too.
Right.
What are our rights with that? Because that it's always extremely tempting for me to just middle finger, you know, and just drive on through because I'm not doing anything wrong. I don't have, you know, they want to find an like a peeled orange that you've got in your car, in the trunk of your car, and they want to give you problems for it. What do we have to do in an agricultural checkpoint? Do you have to do anything?
You know, Charlie, I'm not going to BS you on that one, man. I actually didn't even consider that for the class. I'm going to add it into my notes and try to incorporate that into it.
It's such an obscure thing, too. It's really, I don't even know that you should add it to you. I'm just curious for personal reasons. It's the only agricultural checkpoint I've ever really gone through. It's this one on the way from Vegas to Southern California. And I always think to myself, this is the dumbest exercise in statism I've ever seen. What are you going to do? Where'd you get that food? Oh, I don't know. Carl's Jr. down the street. I mean, what do you want from me? The idea always seemed really silly, and I thought, well, these would be some good guys to practice on, right? Like, what are the agricultural police going to do to you, right? Arrest you? But I've seen some. But then again, I have YouTube, and I've watched some interactions with these guys go south from people who are filming it, and even the agricultural cops, you know.
Yeah.
Took a turn, said, you know, move your car over there, you know, pull over. And the guy's like, no, I'm not going anywhere. He's like, you will. And then they get more cops involved. Next thing you know, it's a big scene. So I just was curious if there was a way to deal with those people.
No, I'm definitely going to incorporate it, man, because I don't want to leave any stone unturned with my presentation, with my seminar, because I want to give people all the tools, like every single last one of them. So I will absolutely include that. And, you know, I think it's just an intimidation thing, Charlie. I think that's ultimately what it's about. And it's funny that you mentioned that you have seen videos of these agricultural checkpoints and some of the officers getting aggressive. I haven't. I've been watching these First Amendment videos and cop watching videos forever. Maybe I take that back. Now I actually have one coming to mind. But they're not frequent. And I don't think they have quite the same chip on their shoulder that maybe a border patrol or a law enforcement officer does have. But at the same time, you make a good point that anybody who's wearing the costume, or I guess uniform as they want to call it, you know, but it's this costume that they believe gives them this sense of authority and the sense of power and extra rights ultimately, right? Kind of like when they call us the sovereign citizens, it's like, if anybody's a sovereign citizen, it's you. It's you're the one not obeying any of my rights. You're the one who is breaking the laws. So, I think that's a good point to add into the seminar. And I honestly, I'm glad that you pointed it out, man, because I want to be very thorough with this. So.
Yeah. Let's get those agricultural cops and give them a hard time. Fuck those people. They're not escaping any of this. Forget them as well. But on a serious note, I do wonder about what our rights are with regard to our personal technology. When you go across, you know, a cop says, open your cell phone for me. And you go, oh, I'm not going to open my cell phone for it. I have read about this, and I found that there's, and I don't know enough to comment on it, but I found that there seems to be differences of opinions on whether or not your phone is controlled with facial recognition or whether it's an actual password. For some reason, that seems to make a difference. What do we know about our rights when it comes with technology, when it comes to maybe traveling to a foreign country? And I'll preface this by saying I'm sure the rules in all foreign countries are different, but you know, you hear about getting off a plane and that the authorities are questioning you about social media posts and things like you have to give them your account, especially if you're coming in on like a visa requirement or something like that. But what are our rights when it comes to our own personal technology, be that cell phones that we have in our pockets or laptops that we put on the carousel at TSA to go through the scanner? Like what do we know about that?
Sure. Well, I'll just start by saying your phone is a gold mine of data, right? So it is absolutely important that you protect that. Now, when it comes to TSA, you are actually able to film the entire process except for their scanners, right? And when your luggage and everything goes through the scanner, right? That's the one time that you're not supposed to. But as soon as you get your phone back, if it goes through all that, you are able to actually film the TSA employees. You're able to question them, talk to them, all that stuff. But I actually just watched a video this morning about somebody who was coming back from, I don't remember where they're coming back from. I don't even know if they mentioned where they're coming back from. They were stopped. They were involved with pro-Palestine protests. And so TSA pulled him aside, started asking him all these questions. But during that whole process, they kept asking this individual for their phone. So I'm going to have to look into that as well, because I think there's some legal gray area as far as when TSA could actually confiscate your phone. But I think what the best practice is generally is anytime that you do know you're going to be doing any type of flying or domestic or even international travel, or going to a protest, any type of activism, civil disobedience, the one thing you're always going to want to do is, yes, disable the biometrics from your phone. Although it might be convenient, and yeah, of course, Google gets all that information, or whoever, you know, Apple, whoever your phone company is, I wouldn't recommend it. And the reason is because law enforcement has in the past, and they can, if your phone is confiscated, unlock it and actually look through all your information just by putting it up to your face, by just by pushing your finger on it. So the one thing that they can't actually extract from us is a password or a PIN code. So that is one of the smartest things that we could do. Not the fingerprint, not the face. Always remember that your social media posts, messages aren't private either. Even if you think they're encrypted, there's a good chance that they'll be able to access those. And just remember that, yeah, the surveillance is everywhere. Like we were talking about, the license plate readers, the street cameras, the AI tools, the facial recognition in our airports as well. I think there's something crazy like 25 airports, or maybe even more now around the country. This was a couple of years ago when I was looking into this, that are fully automated with facial recognition. And, you know, most of us anyway, in the freedom community, opt out of the TSA when we go up to the checkpoints, the facial recognition scans, but there are airports already. And this was part of one of the things that Donald Trump did in his first administration, was build these entry exit systems, biometric entry exit systems. So I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't heard anything as of recently, but I wouldn't be surprised if the next 5 years or so, 10 years, every single airport in the US has these facial recognition scanners and is documenting every single person coming and going. And of course, that's all for our safety, right, Charlie?
Of course. Yes, of course. It's always for our safety. Let's wrap up with this. On the Free Thought Project podcast, you had G. Edward Griffin on, the OG of, you know, he might be the oldest of the OGs. I mean, the ones that are with us is still, I mean, how did that go? What a wealth of knowledge he is. He wrote the seminal book on the Federal Reserve, and it was in part because of his work on central banking that I woke up to this gigantic scam. You'd think it would have been, you know, just living in America for years and years and years and decades, you would have figured it out. But no, you never get that education. You have to get it from some old geezer like Ed, who's got the goods for you. But how did that conversation go with him?
You know, he might be an old geezer physically, but his mind is so sharp, Charlie. And I'll spare you some of the things we were talking about before we got on air here. But man, that guy, he is a wealth of knowledge. And the one thing I will reshare here is that we asked him one question, and about 23 minutes later, he was done with that answer, you know. And he's done so much with his life, as you mentioned, you know, the Creature from Jekyll Island. I mean, that was a huge seminal book and changed so many people's minds about the fraud that is the Federal Reserve cabal. And, you know, he's just done so much work, man. It really is amazing. He interviewed the KGB defector turned journalist, Yuri Bezmenov. I didn't even get to that question, or I did at the very end, but it was like, at that point, we only had a few minutes left. And there was so much that I wanted to talk to him about, but it really was a powerful conversation. And I think the one thing that I really took away from it, that he said several times in different ways, was that the freedom community and the truth community right now, although we are substantial and we're growing in numbers, we're too couched in this idea of being on the defensive and trying to find our own ways, like Freedom Cells, like Connector.app, to find each other in real life. But then when we do that, which is good, of course, that part of it's good, but when we do that, we get into more of this defensive mindset. Like, what do I have to do to survive? What do I have to do to take care of my family? Which is only logical, right? Because you have to take care of yourself first. I mean, just like on the airplanes, you put your mask on first, and then the kid next to you can't pour from an empty cup. That's another analogy, right? So in some ways, yes, we have to do that. But I think that has become maybe too much of a focal point within the agorism anarchist community. Whereas he was suggesting that not only do we have to do that, but we have to go on the offensive. We actually have to build our ranks, build our numbers, build the strategy to make these ideas more cool, to make them more well-known in the bigger lexicon, in the bigger zeitgeist, and take back what is ours, which is our freedom and our rights. And that just being on this defensive, playing in the defensive role, that's never going to actually get back to what we once were as a constitutional republic. And even if that's not necessarily the end goal, I'd be okay with that, right, Charlie? Like, let's just get back to that point, and then we'll talk about anarchy. I'm okay with that. But there has to be some type of move in the right direction. And obviously, we're not seeing that from Trump, even though he's made, you know, every promise under the sun to fix, you know, all these different ills in society. That's not happening. So it is up to us. It is up to us to not only know the information, but also to manifest it into action. And so, man, it was a powerful interview. We usually wrap up within about an hour or so of doing a podcast. His went an hour and 20 something. And granted, just 20 minutes is not that much more, but like for us, every minute of it was gold. And it was just a great conversation. So thank you for asking, man.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have him. I had the pleasure of meeting him at Anarchapulco 2019. Oh, speaking of Anarchapulco, you know who I saw this year, though we weren't allowed to officially see him, was Roger Ver.
Oh, no kidding.
He joined us via a Zoom call with the director of his movie or documentary. I thought it was his lawyer because I missed the very beginning, and someone told me later, no, it was actually the director of his movie. But he was obviously in Spain, and he didn't say a word the entire time. He was sitting next to him, nodded, shook his head, and did all that. But of course, you know, it's a warm audience at Anarchapulco for Roger Ver. And over the years, they've been so involved with Bitcoin.com financing Anarchapulco and everything. Did you ever have any interactions with Roger in your day?
Absolutely, man. I love Roger. I might be one of Roger's biggest fans. I think he's a godsend to our movement, to humanity in general. And yeah, not only just Bitcoin.com, man, this guy has funded everything. He funded Julian Assange's trial. He funded Ross Ulbricht's trial. He funded Derek Broz's tour. I mean, this guy is really the backbone of our community. And not to mention everything that he's done for Bitcoin, right? Like, that's just one aspect of it. But no, Roger Ver is a god. And I almost every day put in a prayer that, you know, he does have his sentencing dropped, or not even his sentencing. I guess we're going to I think it was October. They just moved his motion to dismiss. So hopefully that date sticks. I know it just got bumped back a little bit, but this guy, he is really one of the most authentic, true human beings that we have in this movement, and just a heart of gold. In fact, you know, he's one of the people who turned me on to Xano. He's donated Xano to me and to the Free Thought Project. He's helped us kind of rebuild after our, you know, I'm sure we've talked about this before. We lost, you know, our entire team during the purge and had to kind of rebuild. And so this guy has done so much, not only just for the Liberty community, but for crypto as well. Startups like Xano, startups like XRP helped fund XRP at one point. I mean, this guy's roots, his tentacles extend far beyond most of the things that we hear about. And the fact that he is currently, you know, undergoing all this with the legal system with the U.S., it really is a travesty, especially when you consider that just yesterday, or excuse me, on Monday, my dates are a little off here, the U.S. government started Crypto Week, which is basically, you know, trying to fluff up the idea of Bitcoin and crypto within our government, and this government Bitcoin stockpile and cryptocurrency stockpile that Trump's been talking about. Yet, all the meanwhile, Trump doesn't even acknowledge Roger Ver. I know Elon mentioned something about Roger not being a citizen, therefore he's disqualified or some BS like that. But Roger left because they were targeting him and prosecuting him. And we don't have to get into that story now, but this guy, he really is one of the best of the best. And I'm so glad that you brought him up, man. He really is just a godsend. So yeah, let's do what we can to free Roger Ver and Roman Storm. He just had his first day of trial yesterday. He's the Tornado Cash guy who's also being railroaded by the government right now.
Yeah, they can't understand crypto, so they just try to stop it.
And they say that the war of crypto is over. And that's what the Trump administration's been. You know, they got these crypto czars now. They got a whole, you know, apparatus within the government talking about crypto. And it's like, okay, but what about these people who are still, that were targeted by the Biden administration and still being, you know, condemned? I think they should all, you know, there should not be any political prisoners for Bitcoin anymore. I mean, I think we're beyond that.
You would hope so. And you would think, and Trump said that we were beyond that, but of course he says a lot of things that he doesn't mean, and he lies as a matter of standard operating procedure. Jason, what's the best place for people to find you and to support your work? Because your work is outstanding and it most definitely needs supporting by all of us. So where can people go?
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. So we're still putting out about 2 to 3 articles every day at thefreethoughtproject.com. So check that out, guys. And at the top there, you will see our podcast tab. And we've had so many great guests over the years, including Charlie. We had Dr. Ron Paul. We had Dr. Robert Malone, Ben Swan, Peter Schiff, Tom Woods, the great Tom Woods. In fact, are you going to Ron Paul's barbecue? His 90th birthday?
I was not invited to Ron Paul's 90th
birthday. Oh, you don't have to be invited, man. You got to be there, Charlie.
I would love to go. You know, he was on, he agreed to write the foreword for Controlled Demolition. And Jeff messages me and says, we've got Dr. Paul to write the foreword. I said, oh, that's amazing. And two days after that, he had his medical incident on camera and then we thought, oh, we got to let him off the hook. So we did. And we were more than thrilled to have Doug Casey come on and write the foreword. But that's my connection to Dr. Paul. That and watching a guy who spent 2 decades in American politics still get a standing ovation at the world's largest anarchist conference three different times. And then go to dinner with him where he grabs the microphone and is still pissed off about the government at dinner. So Ron Paul is the best. I'm sitting next to someone. They go, boy, he sure is angry. I was like, yeah, he's been angry for a long time, but he's making sense. So we love Dr. Paul. That's like seeing a real rock star when you see him at an Acapulco. When Ron Paul comes by, everyone stops what they're doing to pay attention. So no, where is his? I'm assuming it's in Texas somewhere.
Lake Jackson. It's August 9th. They're selling tickets, but it all goes to the Ron Paul Institute. So I would love to see you there, Charlie, and shake your hand. I don't think we've ever met in real life, huh?
Not in person. But we will.
Absolutely. But just to finish my plugs there, jasonbassler.com is where you could sign up for my Know Your Rights seminar, guys. So the next one is next Wednesday, the 23rd. Love to have you there. And don't forget that discount code, first class. One other plug, Charlie, if you don't mind.
Please.
We have our Know Your Rights children's book. Maybe the blur is not going to show it, but we published this Know Your Rights children's book for kids 6 to 12 last year. The cop here on the cover is actually a real-life whistleblower who was fired from her department for blowing the whistle, Officer Jody. And it goes through, it teaches kids so much, the Bill of Rights, their First Amendment, due process, probable cause, all the stuff that kids need to know to have a solid foundation and liberty and knowing their rights. And otherwise, Jason Bassler 1 at Twitter and jason.ebassler on Instagram. Those are my two biggest social media accounts. So thank you so much for having me on, Charlie.
That's Jason Bassler, everybody. Check him out. Support his work. If you want to connect with me, you can do that. It's pretty easy. Macroaggressions.io is the website for all of that. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.